This is Jay Sekulow. An extraordinary move, a motion for mandamus to the D.C. Court of Appeals for General Flynn.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
I wish I knew what was going on with Judge Sullivan. I can't say that I do, other than he has gone way out into left field by himself, as we say in our mandamus petition, on this notion that he can appoint an amicus for himself and solicit other amicus briefs and not rule on our motion, on the government's motion to dismiss, which we consented to.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
The law is clear. There's a new Supreme Court decision unanimously decided just within the last 2 weeks that makes it clear he cannot invite the amicus briefs that he has. He doesn't have that authority as a district court judge.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the broadcast. We're taking your calls at 800-684-3110. So an emergency writ of mandamus up to the D.C. Court of Appeals in the case involving General Flynn. You just heard Sidney Powell, the general's lawyer, talking about this. There was, in fact, a Supreme Court decision that came out just about 2 weeks ago. It was a little bit before I made the argument for the president on the cases involving those subpoenas. And what's really fascinating about this is it was unanimous, 9-0. And it basically said that what Judge Sullivan is doing, a district court judge cannot do. In other words, the parties litigate cases before them, not third parties at the district court level during a criminal proceeding, which is precisely what's happening in the way Judge Sullivan has moved the case forward. The other interesting fact I will tell you is that James Comey has not sent out a tweet since May 7th. Now, Than, we were just talking about that before we went on the air. I think it's significant.
Yeah, maybe he's finally wisened up, Jay, and decided to keep silent. I would suggest he probably should have done that a long time ago. But look, just a couple of facts as we set this up. That January 5th White House meeting we've talked so much about, Jay, James Comey was the only holdover there. In other words, he was the only one that was going to continue on to the next administration. And the newly declassified portion of this email from Susan Rice that she decided to write after the fact to memorialize the meeting shows that James Comey clearly planned to continue this mission, continued to plan to withhold information from General Flynn, even though he admitted he was not aware of any wrongdoing of General Flynn. And Jay, the most interesting thing to me about that whole fact is he was going to continue doing that while at the same time intentionally leaking memos that he wrote to himself about meetings with the incoming president. Jay, if I were James Comey, I'd probably have an attorney. And guess what I'd probably be doing? I probably wouldn't be saying anything.
Yeah, I think I'd be pretty quiet. Andy Economo, senior counsel for the ACLJ. We're going to get into this writ of mandamus in a moment, but I couldn't resist the fact that your favorite, one of your favorites, James Comey, silent since May 7th.
That's rather extraordinary on the part of St. James, the pious, to be silenced for so long and not saying anything. And I think the reason is that the walls are closing in on him, Jay, and he's beginning to see that he is the focus of a lot of things, sneaking FBI agents into the White House without talking to White House counsel to interview General Flynn and doing all these other things that are now slowly coming out. I'd keep my mouth shut if I was him, too.
You're 100% correct. Now, we're going to get into this is an emergency writ of mandamus to basically stop the trial judge from engaging in the activity that he did by appointing this third party amicus curiae basically to prosecute as a special prosecutor General Flynn. This is, remember, after the Department of Justice decided that they would support the withdrawal of the plea and not prosecute the case. We're going to take your calls, your reaction to all of these stunning developments at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. I'll tell you, every day something else is coming. Again, so if you want to talk to us on air, it's easy to do, as you know, 800-684-3110. If you want to get your question in by Facebook or Periscope, easy as well. And if you're on Facebook or Periscope, let me encourage you to share this with your friends. We have a lot of people that are watching. We encourage you to do that. All right. Also, stay engaged with the ACLJ. You can do that by Facebook, Periscope, Twitter, at Jay Sekulow, at Jordan Sekulow, at ACLJ. And your support of the ACLJ allows us to bring you this broadcast every single day. We'll be back with more, including your calls, in just a moment.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
You know, I once had a federal judge in a case out in Wichita, Kansas, and he appeared with me on television, and which you're not supposed to do in a debate format. And I'm going to tell you something. I said, you're supposed to be the umpire, not the cheerleader for the other side. And Andy here, Judge Sullivan's situation as it relates to General Flynn, it's even more than that. It's appointing someone for the sole purpose, and we've seen this in the motions and the papers that have been filed, basically to re-prosecute General Flynn, which I don't know where he has the authority to do that. And at the same time, this is after the Department of Justice said, we're going to support the withdrawal of the plea. We're not going to prosecute. There was misconduct here.
This is an extraordinary move by an extraordinarily activist district judge. I've never seen anything like it. This is a separation of powers lesson in the law school 101, civil procedure, criminal procedure, Jay. General Flynn has filed a motion to withdraw his plea. The government has agreed that he should not be prosecuted. And now the judge has decided that he is going to become the prosecutor in the case. The reality is, I'm sure he'd make a good U.S. attorney, Judge Sullivan. Unfortunately, that position has already been filled, and the U.S. attorney has made a decision that they're not going to go forward with the case. Where in the world is this judge headed? What kinds of things could possibly be in his mind? I think the D.C. Circuit is going to take up the writ of mandamus, and I think it's going to embarrass him as well it should, I'm afraid to say, and I hate to say, a judge of these many years of service acting in this unhinged fashion.
Gloria on Facebook, and I'm reading this, writes, why isn't Judge Sullivan reprimanding the prosecutors that lied to the court when they insisted repeatedly that there was no exculpatory evidence? In other words, Andy, no Brady material. They're the ones that should be under the hot spotlight right now, not General Flynn.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Jay. I mean, you know, when you hold back material under the Brady decision, which says you've got to give exonerative and exculpatory material, he ought to be looking at those prosecutors and saying to them, you came before this court and you did not disclose to the other side, the defense, that there was material in your possession that exonerated him Flynn and that said that he was not guilty, you are the ones that should be before me. You are the ones who should be held in criminal contempt. Show cause why that shouldn't be my order, not telling the government you can't prosecute a man who they don't want to prosecute anymore. And I agree that caller is very percipient.
So, you know, it's interesting because Sidney Powell files this motion, writ of mandamus, which, I mean, they're not filed that often, but here clearly the need for it. I mean, I think that's self-evident. But what's also interesting, at the same time that this writ gets filed yesterday, Senator Graham Fan says, hey, wait a minute, we've got to also look at this. We've got to talk to James Comey, Clapper, Brennan, Susan Rice, others.
Yeah, this is a pretty breathtaking announcement from the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Jay. He has announced that on May 21st, his committee will hold a convening in accordance with the rules that they have for issuing subpoenas. And then on June 4th, they will vote on issuing those subpoenas to 53 individuals. And Jay, I can't go through the entire list because it's so lengthy, but it's all the people we've talked about on this broadcast. It's the unmaskers. It's those who were planning behind the scenes in both the Carter Page case, the FISA case, the Michael Flynn case. James Clapper, James Comey, Jacob Lew, who I know Andy is really excited to know about since he doesn't know what Jacob Lew would do unmasking individuals, and yet he was doing it. But here's the significance, Jay.
As the United Treasury States Secretary, Senate, that would raise a question. Go ahead, Pam. I'm sorry.
Well, he's going to the Treasury Secretary is now going to have to answer to the United States Senate that exact question, as will the other 52 individuals on this list. Jay, this is a dramatic expansion of the investigation. And I will tell you, typically these subpoenas come in a bipartisan fashion. Senator Feinstein has not been willing to go along. But Chairman Graham, Jay, he has announced the date of the vote. Assuming there is a majority in the committee, these 53 subpoenas are going to be issued.
53 subpoenas. Does that tell you something right there? The nature of what was going on here? All right, we're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. We're going to talk about that writ of mandamus, what it means. But let's take Daniel's call out of New Mexico first. He's on line one. Hi, Daniel.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. My question was, because Judge Sullivan is making decisions that are above his authority, could a judicial oversight board intervene and block the judge's order?
Well, it's not a judicial oversight board. It is a court of appeals. So let's get right. It's a great question you asked, Daniel. It's a three-judge court of appeals. A writ of mandamus has been filed, and that will be heard by a three-judge panel. Now, again, its briefs have been filed. Whether they'll have arguments or not, we don't know. And whether those arguments will be, they would certainly be by phone. But, Andy, let's talk about what a writ of mandamus is for people that are not familiar with it.
Okay, a writ of mandamus is simply an order under the All Writs Act. Federal courts have the power to issue orders, they call them writs, to implement their jurisdiction and to see that things are done right, consistent with the law when someone goes off into left field, as Judge Sullivan has done. A writ of mandamus is a Latin word, and what it stands for is we order you to. That's what mandamus means. We order you to do or not to do something. And what Sidney Powell, Lieutenant General Flynn's lawyer, is doing is asking the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, which is the court directly above Judge Sullivan, the district court, to order Judge Sullivan to comply with the law and to grant the government's motion to dismiss Flynn as a defendant and to end this case. That's exactly what she is asking the court to do, and I hope they act on an expedited basis. These three judges who will be sitting as overseers, there's not a board of overseers, it's a court of appeals, and issue this writ of mandamus. That's what the law requires.
You know what is, I was just thinking about this. We've moved to have judges removed. It's called recusal, and you make motions. Here it's a writ of mandamus because the judge has issued a pending order. But realize what this judge has done. He's issued a pending order, and that pending order says, I'm appointing a special counsel, basically, an amicus, friend of the court. But he's told the friend of the court what he wants them to argue, the way in which he's going to do this. This is unprecedented. And as I said, it comes on the heels of a Supreme Court opinion issued 2 weeks ago by Justice Ginsburg, unanimous, 9-0, where Justice Ginsburg, writing for the court, said, when it comes to litigation, this kind of litigation, others as well, The parties brief it. The parties raise the issue. The parties put the case forward. And if two of the parties agree that the case should no longer go forward, you know what the judge is supposed to do? Andy, the judge is supposed to issue an order and enter an order of dismissal.
That's right. Jay, the judge is an umpire. The judge is not a player in the case. He is supposed to be acting as a neutral arbiter, simply overseeing the litigation before him or her. And Judge Ginsburg, Justice Ginsburg, as you correctly pointed out, writing for a unanimous Supreme Court, told the Ninth Circuit, the famous Ninth Circuit, the always reversed Ninth Circuit, reversed yet again, stay out of litigation. Let the parties litigate. You are not there to take sides in the controversy. You are there to rule on motions as an umpire and not to be a litigant participating in the baseball game. That's not your job.
So then we've got that. And then again, let's set up what the Senate hearing is going to be so people understand exactly what's at play.
Yeah, so the Senate Judiciary Committee, Jay, they hold what are called executive business meetings. That's when they consider the official business of the committee, whether it's legislation or judicial nominations or, in this case, investigations, and where they would issue subpoenas. And, Jay, if there is not bipartisan consensus between the chairman and the ranking member, in this case, Dianne Feinstein, on a subpoena, the committee has to hold a vote, and they have to go through a process. Chairman Graham has announced that he is initiating that process for subpoenas on a list of 53 individuals, and he has announced those 53 names. I've been through them. It's all the names we've talked about on this broadcast. So here's how it's going to work, Jay. On May 21st, the committee is going to meet. That's tomorrow, and they're going to bring this matter up for debate and for consideration. So you'll hear some sound out of the Senate Judiciary Committee tomorrow on that. And then on June 4th is when that list of subpoenas will be eligible to have a vote inside the committee. There is every indication that a majority of the committee, Jay, will vote to issue those subpoenas. So just about 2 weeks from now, the Senate Judiciary Committee will be issuing 53 subpoenas to James Comey, Dennis McDonough, Susan Rice, Glenn Simpson, Sally Yates, and many, many others. Jay, this is about ready to get very real in the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Yeah, Ben, that is a cast of characters, let me tell you. After what we went through with the Mueller report, that's like bringing back the greatest hits from the 19... the greatest hits from 2015. Unbelievable. But let me also say this. We were just in court on Monday, in court being again over the phone on arguments, on the issue of unmasking because of FOIA litigation that we have on these very issues. Your ACLJ at the forefront of these critical cases defending America. We encourage you to support the work of the ACLJ.org. Share this feed on Facebook, Periscope. Go ahead and share it if you want to talk to us on air. 800-684-3110. We'll be back with more in just a minute.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Hey, welcome back. We're taking your calls, 800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. Writ of mandamus up to the D.C. Court of Appeals for General Flynn. What's the issue? The ask, basically, is the judge in the trial court, Emmett Sullivan, has exceeded his constitutional authority. And there's a Supreme Court decision that just came out 2 weeks ago, unanimous by Justice Ginsburg, and it is right on point, exactly on point. Here's what Sidney Powell, this is Lieutenant General Flynn's lawyer. She's done a phenomenal job on this case. Here's what she said.
I wish I knew what was going on with Judge Sullivan. I can't say that I do, other than he has gone way out into left field by himself, as we say in our mandamus petition, on this notion that he can appoint an amicus for himself and solicit other amicus briefs and not rule on our motion, on the government's motion to dismiss, which we consented to.
So there you have it. I mean, and Andy, I want to go back to this point because I still cannot for the life of me figure out why in the world why is Judge Sullivan doing this?
Well, I'd like to know myself. We can look at the politics of it, Jay, and we shouldn't always overlook the politics of it. He's a Clinton appointee. The judge that he appointed, Gleason, is a Clinton appointee. That judge that he appointed as his amicus curiae wrote a scathing article on the president that was in the Washington Post. These politics plays a role. We can't say that these district judges who are political appointees ultimately, even though approved by the Senate, don't have political agendas. And unfortunately, they're supposed to suppress those once they get on the bench and act like umpires, but the political aspects keep coming up. Suddenly, he and Gleason are getting together, and they're going to be a two-team match against General Flynn. Why? The government says we don't want to prosecute him. The defendant says we agree we don't want him prosecuted. The rules of 28 of the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure say if you don't want to prosecute government, you can dismiss the case. And the judge, as a ministerial act, simply says, fine, the case is over with. What are you up to here, Judge Sullivan? What's going on? I think the D.C. Circuit is going to get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, I think so, too. Diane's calling from New York. She's on line one. By the way, if you want to talk to us on air, it's 1-800-684-3110. Diane?
Hey, Jay. Hey, everyone. Hey. Thank you so much for all the great work you guys have done. You're the only thing right now that's keeping some of us sane. I believe Judge Sullivan was the second...
I think we lost Diane.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Will, are you having it on your end or is it just me?
Can you guys hear me?
Try it again, Diane. Go ahead.
Okay. Sorry about that. I wanted to say thank you to you guys again. But sure. In terms of Judge Sullivan, I think he was the second judge that was appointed to the Flynn case. I thought the first one had to recuse himself for some conflict of interest that wound up coming out later on, that there were some ties to Peter Strzok. Is anything going to happen to this judge seeing that?
Well, I hope what happens to the judge is he gets reversed. I mean, you know, sometimes I get asked in cases, what exactly would you like us to do, Mr. Sekulow? And if I lost the case below, I will say sometimes, somewhere in the opinion, I'd like to say reversed. Here, what you're going to want to have happen is for the writ of mandamus, Andy, to issue.
The caller is very, very smart, very intelligent. This plea was taken by Judge Contreras originally, who recused himself because he had a conflict of interest knowing one of the FBI agents that was involved in the case. Judge Sullivan was reassigned to the case, and Judge Sullivan then took it upon himself to play the role not only of the district judge, but of the U.S. attorney as well. He said, you're a traitor. You've defamed the flag. The minute he made those statements during the course of the prosecution, before this case was ultimately dismissed, or sought to be dismissed by the Justice Department. He jumped the fence from being a judge, impartial and neutral, to being a prosecutor. That's just wrong, Jay. You don't do that.
So in this is an interesting one. In 2013, Judge Gleason, who's now this kind of special prosecutor, if you will, himself held that, I'm going to read from his opinion. The government has near absolute power under the federal rules of criminal procedure to extinguish a case that it has brought. Apparently now, as our producer points out, apparently now he has changed his mind. Not only that, I've had the situation where they've changed, you know, they've decided to go in a different direction. But this judge and the actions taken by this judge, Stan, have highlighted the irregularities that you're dealing with and now we'll be dealing with the United States Senate.
So, Jay, now you've got Justice Ginsburg and Judge Gleason, who, by the way, is anything but neutral. His firm represented Sally Yates in front of the House Intel Committee. That might be a conflict of interest as well. But you've got Judge Gleason and Justice Ginsburg, these bastions of conservative ideology, saying that the parties have to decide who gets to argue the case. And yet you have Judge Sullivan arguing the opposite. Jay, I think it's pretty clear. The only reason that they've had a change of opinion is because there is a desired outcome in this case. And look, I will tell you, The committee with oversight of the judicial branch, the co-equal branches, of course, but the ones that will inquire of them, the ones that will confirm judges, the Senate Judiciary Committee, Jay, that's the same one that's about ready to issue 53 subpoenas. So don't think that the legislative branch is going to sit quietly on this one.
Ben, I'm going to follow up on that with you because you think about this 53 subpoenas. Give us some of the top 10 of who is going to be called.
Okay. How about
give me
James
five.
Baker? Okay, John Brennan,
yep.
James Clapper, this is probably number one in my book, James Comey, he's got an awful lot to answer for, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, and let's go with this one, Jay, let's go with this one because this is news today. Susan Rice, newly declassified email. What do you think she's going to say about the email that was declassified today? Why did she write it as President Trump was getting inaugurated into office and trying to make it clear that President Obama, while they've changed their story, he did know about it, he was involved, but Jay, he was, quote, playing it by the book. Why did she feel the need to write that email?
So what did the email actually say? Do we have the exact wording of that email?
Yes, we do. That most of it was released before now, but the new portion that has now been declassified says that Director Comey affirmed, this is in response to the president, that he is proceeding, quote, by the book as it relates to law enforcement. It goes on from there, Jay, but essentially here's the nutshell of it. It is confirmation to the former president of the United States that Director Comey is going to continue to monitor the situation to see if inappropriate activity happens. She confirms in the email, Jay, that he has not seen anything appropriate to this point. But even as President Obama leaves office, he's essentially assuring he's going to stay on it.
Yeah. They saw it that basically saw nothing that was inappropriate. Andy, really quick, was in the last minute here. You expect, just give me the yes or no, as Justice Kagan asked a colleague of ours. Do you think these witnesses testify or do they take the Fifth?
Oh, I was going to say, you're going to hear Fifth Amendment. If their lawyers are smart, you're going to hear Fifth Amendment all over that committee.
That's what I think, too. All right, we're taking your calls when we come back from the break. 1-800-684-3110. There's just a lot going on. 800-684-3110. Your support of the ACLJ keeps this broadcast on the air. I encourage you to support the work of the ACLJ. You do that at aclj.org. And if you want to talk to us on air, 800-684-3110. And of course, if you don't get the full hour of the broadcast, just go over to Facebook, Periscope, wherever you watch your online platforms. We're there. We're at aclj.org. And stay engaged with us on Twitter as well. And at Jay Sekulo, at Jordan Sekulo, and at ACLJ. Back with Gornham.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Talking about freedom. Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the broadcast. So General Flynn's sitting palace filed a writ of mandamus with the D.C. Court of Appeals. A point of that is to, and this is important, is to order that the district court judge that's appointed this former judge to hear the case and basically bring new charges against General Flynn, basically to tell that judge, stop. You don't have the constitutional authority to do that. Now, at the same time that this writ of mandamus is pending, there are Senate hearings that are going to go underway, led by Senator Lindsey Graham, chairman of the Judiciary Committee. 53 witnesses are going to be called. We just gave you some of the top. Comey, Clapper, Brennan, Baker, Strzok, Page. Pretty impressive list. 53 of them. I asked how many of the top five or six that I just named will take the Fifth Amendment. A friend of mine, very well-known lawyer, a good friend of ours, just said, sent me a text saying 53 lawyers will take the Fifth Amendment. Andy, that's probably right.
Right. That's exactly what ought to happen. You ought to hear the Fifth Amendment invoked many, many times if anybody's got any brains in that hearing. Of course, James Comey knows all the answers to everything. I'm sure he'll be talking and explaining because he's the de facto president of the United States. He protects the country. He knows everything. He's everywhere. He's seen everywhere. He's knowledgeable about all things. I'm sure he won't. I bet you he talks.
Let me go to Fan Bennett on this, and Fan, lay out in some detail here what the Senate is considering.
Okay, Jay, yeah, and the conversation you just had with Andy is actually going to play into this quite a bit. Let me lay out what they're going to do, first of all. Tomorrow in the Senate Judiciary Committee, May 21st, the committee will meet in what is called an executive business meeting, and they will put these 53 subpoenas on the table for consideration. They will debate them. Senator Feinstein has already said that she is going to oppose the motion. They will continue to debate. They will be amendable. I would imagine that the changes will not be made. And then it has to do what has to happen is has to be what's called held over, Jay. They have to hold the matter over until their next executive business meeting, which happens to be on June 4th. When they come to that executive business meeting on June 4th, the committee will then have to vote on these subpoenas because, again, the ranking member, Dianne Feinstein, opposes the measure to issue the subpoenas. So at that point on June 4th, if a majority of the committee approves it, those subpoenas will be issued. But, Jay, this is the question I wanted to ask you and also maybe Andy. You're saying, and I think you're correct on this, that most or all of these 53 witnesses will plead the Fifth, and the committee is actually anticipating that as well. But one of the questions they have, Jay, is most of these 53 individuals have already given testimony on this matter. I mean, I happen to be holding Susan Rice's testimony right here on this exact matter, and there's this question of if they've already spoken to the matter, how much
have
of their Fifth Amendment right is waived? I don't know the answer to that. I wondered if you and Andy might be able to address it.
Well, they may, you know, look, they may, the lawyers will, I think, still assert the Fifth Amendment, Andy, and the waiver issue will be what Lindsey Graham and others would argue, but it will, if you were the lawyer, you would still assert it.
Yes, I think it may be waived. I don't know if it is or not, but if I was a lawyer and I was asked a question and I would look at my client and I would say, I refuse to answer on the grounds that the response may tend to incriminate me, Fifth Amendment, and shut your mouth. Because the more you say, the more you can be in contempt of Congress, the more you've committed perjury, and the more you've dug a hole for yourself. But these are politicians in many cases, and they can't shut up. They don't know when good advice is being given, Jay.
All right, we're going to take your calls when we come back. We have one line open, 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. Man, what a day. Writs of mandamus, Senate Judiciary Committee hearings, your American Center for Law and Justice in court this past Monday, just a few days ago, on this issue of unmasking. So when you support the ACLJ, all the things we're talking about and our ability to communicate it to you on this broadcast, that's what you're supporting. We encourage you to do that online at ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. Get your questions and comments in by Facebook and Periscope. We'll take some more of those. And I will tell you this, that we're also going to take calls at 800-684-3110. So if you're on the line, hang on the line. Back with more in just a moment.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the podcast. 1-800-684-3110 is our number. That's 800-684-3110. I'm going to go to Sharon. She is calling from California. Sharon, go ahead.
Hello. My question is, when they want to issue these subpoenas and these politicians all take the fifth, then what happens after that? Is it still possible for them to be subpoenaed? Or is it much to do about nothing, and we're back?
No, I mean they're just Sharon. They've been if they attend, or even if they exercise their Fifth Amendment privilege, they have been subpoenaed. I mean, Andy, let me go to Stan first on this. The Senate subpoena is a subpoena. Now, forcibility is a little bit different than a normal situation, but it's a Senate subpoena.
Yeah, enforceability is a second issue. If the committee votes on June 4th to issue those subpoenas, they will be issued. And Jay, here's the other point that I would make. It's not just the appearance and the verbal testimony that's being subpoenaed. It's other evidence and documents involved in the case. And again, we've talked about this on this broadcast, Jay, but that's why the information that we've uncovered in FOIA becomes so critical, because there are other pieces that then the committee can look to and say, we need that document to get to the bottom of our investigation. And again, the email that we had, this one from Susan Rice memorializing the January 5th Oval Office meeting with President Obama, Vice President Biden, and others, most of that was out, Jay. But what we didn't have was this declassified portion that says that James Comey doesn't have any indication of wrongdoing thus far, but he's going to continue on. So again, I would just tell the caller, it's not just the testimony in front of the committee right. They're looking for. They're also looking for evidence and documents.
What date is the date of that email?
January 20th, 2017 at 12:15 in the afternoon.
So, days later, when they have no evidence of wrongdoing, the FBI, through James Comey's leadership, sneaks two FBI agents in because they could get away with it to interview General Flynn. Andy, that's called entrapment, among many other things.
Well, that's exactly what it is, Jay. Let's not investigate criminal activity. Let's create it. Let's see if we can get him to lie. Let's see if we can get him to make admissions. Let's see if we can get him prosecuted, or even better, fired. And who knows about this? Ultimately, your good friend, Bob Mueller, special counsel. He has access to the document. Does he turn it over to the other side, to General Flynn's people? No. Does he disclose it at the plea hearing? No. Does he tell Judge Sullivan about it? or Contreras who's taking the plea? No. He knows nothing about disclosure requirements under the Brady rule, and yet they proceed and forge on with the prosecution. Attorney General Barr comes in and says, wait a minute, where do you think you're going here? You've got exculpatory information that you didn't give to the other side. This prosecution must end. Judge Sullivan says, no, it's not going to end. I'm going to become the U.S. attorney, and we're going to see where this goes, and it's going to go where I want it to go. Well, let's just see if the D.C. Circuit agrees with that.
Yeah, I'll tell you something. The more this goes, the worse it gets, I think, for Judge Sullivan and the way he's doing this order. Let's go ahead and take a phone call. We're taking your calls, 800-684-3110. Jerry from Rhode Island's on line three. Hi, Jerry.
Hello, team. I was called in about the pace of the mandamus and will it be fast-tracked,
yep,
especially in light of the two-week ago decision. But something that was just said, I have a question about. If they take Fifth Amendment, are they declared unavailable and all their hearsay statements, including made on TV, can that all come in?
Well, many of these, Jerry, yeah, on the issue of if they take the Fifth, what comes in? I mean, there's already, as Stan pointed out, there's already been testimony from a lot of these witnesses. So if the Senate could just point out the inconsistencies, if there are any, the inconsistencies with newly discovered information, like the Susan Rice email, and dealt a lot of explaining for James Comey to do. And he sure has made a lot of statements publicly. So, you know, you'd have to see where that would go. But I will tell you, in my view, it sets up a very difficult task for these witnesses, Stan, as they are called up. A lot of them are going to, I suspect, even though the lawyers are going to say take the Fifth, I suspect a lot of these folks' egos will get in the way and they'll testify.
Well, I think Andy's probably correct about James Comey. He's never resisted an opportunity to try to talk to the cameras. He probably will again. But, Jay, I would say this to the caller. If you plead the Fifth, yes, you don't necessarily have to answer questions that you don't want to. But, Jay, you also can't set the record straight when facts are contradictory. As you point out, for example, let me just give you one example. Mary McCord, this is one of the people that's been issued a subpoena. She's also, the transcript of her interview with the House Intelligence Committee has been released. Jay, she worked for Sally Yates at the time of this meeting in the White House, the January 5th meeting, and the testimony is that she knew about the information involving General Flynn, but she says she did not brief Sally Yates, and so Sally Yates went into that meeting unaware. I know Andy is skeptical of that. I understand why, but where did Mary McCord go after leaving Sally Yates' employ, Jay? She went to work with Adam Schiff, and she worked with the inspector, intelligence community inspector general Michael Atkinson, to do what? To coordinate with the whistleblower. So, Jay, if she comes before the committee and pleads the Fifth, those facts can be put out there, and
yep,
she won't have her a chance to respond. She's going to have to make a decision whether or not she wants to respond to that.
You know, Andy, I was thinking about this. If you look at both the mandamus side of this, what is, in other words, what happens for General Flynn, and then the Senate investigation, we lived this. You and I lived this for 3 years with Bob Mueller, as you mentioned. But information that is now coming out, some of which we suspected all along, is making it very clear that this has been an entire setup for 3 years, 3.5 years.
Yes, yes, it has, Jay. This has been an attempt to create a collusion episode and scenario with Russia to discredit the president that never, ever existed. And it has grabbed the attention and taken the attention of the country away from the president away from the business of governing and of a million other things that he should have been doing and did not have the opportunity to do because they were determined, Comey, Mueller, his team of 18 prosecutors, Obama, Biden, and I do believe Yates, to discredit this president with this Russia hoax. That didn't work. We move a little south to the Ukraine. We try that. That didn't work. We keep going. We're never going to end this thing until the president finally is reelected.
Yeah, and then who knows what they'll do. All right, let's go to Jim. He's calling from Wisconsin. He's on line four. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Just to give you a brief snippet of my experience, besides being a litigation paralegal for over 30 years, I'm a law student, and I also used to investigate for the Defense Department at one time. One, right. Two questions for you. One, why isn't Trump appointing a special counsel to look into this, because you and I both know, and I've worked within the government circles, Barr is not going to do anything in the end to get these guys prosecuted.
Hold it, Jim. There is a special counsel. I mean, it's not called a special counsel because he's a sitting U.S. attorney, and that's John Durham, who was appointed by Bill Barr, the Attorney General of the United States. So they are doing a very deep dive into all of the origins of the Russia investigation and the ramifications legally that were being done and inappropriate interference with political campaigns. That is a very thorough investigation. So I think that, you know, saying that nothing's going to get done or the Attorney General hasn't done anything, I beg your pardon. Bill Barr has done exactly what a good Attorney General would do. He appointed a seasoned U.S. attorney in John Durham, who knows how to investigate cases. And he is investigating. And Andy, that is what the process is. And that is supposed to what happens. It's supposed to be what happens.
Well, that's exactly correct. And that's what he's doing. And Bill Barr is a good Attorney General. What's going on, and he's taking action. And he did the right thing by appointing an outside United States attorney from Connecticut who is looking at things. It may take a while. You may think and be in despair that it may not happen. It will. Don't worry.
But these things take time. That's just the nature of it. All right, we're coming up on the last segment of the broadcast. I've got a couple lines open for you at 800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Fam, before we go to the break, when is this Senate hearing supposed? When are the subpoenas supposed to be issued?
Supposed to be issued on June 4th, Jay. We'll know a little bit more tomorrow after there's debate on the measure inside the Judiciary Committee. But Chairman Graham has already set the procedure in motion, so they should be issued on June 4th. And Jay, I would maybe just make one final comment about the conversation that you just had. I, too, have confidence in Bill Barr. But if you look at the evidence as well, what has John Durham been doing lately? He's been staffing up. He's been adding prosecutors. You need
right.
Prosecutors, Jay, if you're not going to prosecute cases.
Let me tell you something, folks, okay? I trust the Attorney General of the United States. I think he's one of the, if not the greatest Attorney General we've ever had, and this is his second go-round at this. I think he's the best Attorney General we've had. This is a man that loves our country, supports the Constitution, and is going to do what's right. The wrongdoers, and there were lots of them under Bob Mueller's watch, they'll be held accountable. But we're going to do it. It's being done the right way. When it's done the right way, it takes a little longer. And when they do it the wrong way, it just makes stuff up. All right, we're taking a break. When we come back, we'll take your calls. 1-800-684-3110. Don't forget, support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org. Back with more in just a moment.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org. where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
All right, last segment of the broadcast. We're going to take your calls at 800-684-3110. Let me say this also, that you got to understand something in these kind of cases. And I think things are moving very rapidly, but things take time. And that's just the nature of these kind of issues. Things take time, but it's going to be done the right way. All right, let's go to the phones. David's calling. He's on line three. Hi, David.
Hi, Jay. Thank you for taking my call and for all you guys do. I was thinking about... when someone's testifying takes the fifth, I was thinking about Lois Lerner and when she was testifying in her situation. And then after she pled the fifth, she was allowed to speak and defend herself. I just didn't know if that would be allowed or if that's not allowable.
She really didn't. She said, while I'd like to testify, I don't think we have that sound. It's too late in the broadcast to get it. But she's basically, I'd like to testify. She's been advised to exercise her constitutional rights, which if I was her lawyer, I would have had her do too. She was fired, though. Okay, she lost her job. She was the head of the tax-exempt division of the Internal Revenue Service, and she was fired. And then an injunction was issued against the IRS and made them change their policies. And then after that, a monetary damage went to all the Tea Parties that were involved in the litigation. So you know what? They paid a price for this stuff, Andy. There was a real cost.
Oh, yes, there was. Andy? Don't think that you got away with this without having to pay an obligation. We won a case... a massive case against the Internal Revenue Service by sheer persistence and by following the evidence where it went.
Well, that's the idea here, and we got a good result in that case. But it took, I think, we litigated that for Dan. What was that IRS case between the hearings and the trials? I think it took 3 years.
Yeah, I think 3 years is about right. Sounds like a similar time frame, though, Jay, because guess how long we've been litigating these unmasking cases? Since 2017. 3 years is about when you start getting information in a lot of these types of cases.
And we were just in court on Monday on this stuff, folks. So, right. I mean, it's moved slow, but it's moving. All right, let's go right back to the phones. We're going to go to Daniel calling from Virginia on line two. Hi, Daniel.
Yeah, hi. Unlikely as it may be, what if this panel rules with the judge?
Take the writ of mandamus up to the Supreme Court of the United States. That's what you would do. If this panel were to rule, first of all, two things you could do. If it goes to the three-judge panel and they rule against Sidney Powell and against General Flynn and they deny Sidney's motion, then I would take up a petition for rehearing en banc, which means the entire D.C. Circuit. And if I had time, if not, I would take an emergency stay of the emergency mandamus right up to the U.S. Supreme Court. I would not hesitate to protect my client's interest, Andy, in a situation like that.
Oh, no question about it. I would go to the Supreme Court, and I'll tell you what I'll predict. You'll win in the Supreme Court 9-0.
I think that's right. All right, let's go back to the phones. Gary's calling from North Carolina. He's on line one. Gary, go ahead.
Hey, Jay, just one quick question. For those that are subpoenaed, let's say that they have no documents to give up, but they plead the fifth on their testimony. Does what happens at that point? Does it just end right there or what?
Well, Fan, I mean, if they take the Fifth Amendment, as Fan said, I think, look, they've made public documents. Those will be brought to light. It'll show it. By the way, a Fifth Amendment, just so everybody understands, doesn't mean you're guilty. Innocent people take the fifth. But here you have prior statements, and I think, Fan, look at, again, go over that. I want you to go over the email from Susan Rice. This is so telling, especially the date of it.
Sure, Jay. The date of the email is January 20th, so right as President Trump is coming into office. But the purpose of the email, which she sends to herself, is to memorialize the January 5th meeting. And the portion of the email that was redacted, the portion that we had already seen, Jay, conclusively showed that President Obama was not only in the know, but he was really directing the conversation. The portion that was now unredacted just recently confirms that Jim Comey is going to continue this monitoring of General Flynn, even though Here's the quote. He added that he has no indication thus far that Flynn has passed classified information to Kislyak, and yet they are going to continue to monitor him, Jay. The other couple of things I would say, I mean, holding in my hand a stack of testimonies that these witnesses that are now being subpoenaed have already issued. So I think there will be a conversation about whether or not they have already waived that right. Maybe it won't hold. But Jay, then on the point of documents, a lot of the documents the committee is looking, they are not in the possession of the people involved. And so the committee still may be able to get those documents. If these individuals in their official capacity sent those emails, the committee can still get them.
Yeah, they absolutely could. Okay, let's go ahead and get John out of Virginia. Hi, John. John, that's line four.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can now. Great. Go ahead.
Okay, great. I had a quick question. So if, God forbid, Trump does not win the election in the fall, yep, can the new president just come in and shut all these investigations down, or right back to where we were when we started with?
He can't stop the United States Senate. He can't shut the United States Senate down unless the Senate changes from Republican control to Democratic control. But as far as the Department of Justice, could a new president shut it down? Andy, no question.
No question. He puts a new attorney general in there. The new attorney general says, we're not doing this anymore. We're closing it. Forget it. It's over with. So this election means a lot more than simply the reelection of President Trump. It means whether or not we shall continue in the Justice Department to be a free, independent agency looking for facts and following the evidence where it goes or not. Because the president, new attorney general, whoever that might be, could end it in a moment.
So there you have it. All right, let's grab the last call. Mike's calling from California. Hey, Mike.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, everything I keep seeing is, what happened to the original 302?
You're talking about the 302 is the FBI notes from the agents during an interview. What do you mean, what's happened to them?
The very first 302 that was taken was...
Are you talking about some of the ones that allegedly have not been found?
Right.
Yeah, it must be what you're referring to. So look, there's been some reports that some of the 302s may not have been found. I kind of think it's like, it's probably they're there. They just got to look a little harder. So again, the 302s are just the FBI agents' reports. And we'll see what happens on all of that. But I think right now to me, it's very clear. You've got a writ of mandamus up to the D.C. Court of Appeals to tell Judge Sullivan what you did is wrong. You can't do that. You don't appoint a prosecutor once the government and the party agree the case should be withdrawn. So said Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg 9-0 on behalf of the unanimous Supreme Court 2 weeks ago. That's number one. Number two. At the same time, the United States Senate is going to have hearings. Subpoenas, 53 witnesses. At the same time that that's going on, John Durham, U.S. Attorney from Connecticut, doing the deep dive investigation of the origins of the Russia probe. All that's happening right now. And then this past Monday, your ACLJ in court on this very issue. Your support of the ACLJ allows us to do this. To go to court, to bring you this broadcast, or even yesterday when we saw the release of Pastor Naren from India, Christian pastor who was held in India, got freed yesterday, returned to the United States. Your support of the ACLJ makes all of that happen. We encourage you to do that online. That's the best way to do it. ACLJ.org, ACLJ.org. Let me also say, if you want to stay engaged with us, Facebook, Periscope, Twitter, get involved in all of our social media platforms. It's a great way to stay engaged and stay up to date. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Who knows what news will break? Talk to you then.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.